Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bellis here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we've got a little bit of news to get to, some brief stuff to touch on before getting into some football talk. You know, we've been focusing in on the new position coaches over the last few weeks, and now we have one more to talk about in a somewhat new position coach with Paul Chris taking back over the quarterback room, as well as that'll kind of transition into us talking about the offense overall, how it will kind of look as you get back under the play calling of Paul Chris. Of course, Joel Rudolph was calling the plays last year. It switched back over to Chris for this upcoming season, so we'll talk about everything that kind of goes with that in a little bit more depth. We haven't talked about that too deeply on the podcast quite yet with this offseason, so we'll touch on a little bit of that, and then we'll get you guys out of here. And hopefully you'll enjoy another week of the show. But before we get into everything, guys, I'm going to touch upon Home Field Apparel. Last week they dropped their Wisconsin line, some vintage designs. I actually got notification of my shipment this morning. Spent way too much money over there this past week. They're dropping their Minnesota Golden Gopher line. So right now Wisconsin had a pretty good week in terms of overall sales, but we can always add to that and try and beat the Gophers because I know they're going to come out strong and try and beat Wisconsin. So smart marketing on their part, dropping Wisconsin and Minnesota back-to-back week. But they have vintage college apparel that you guys should go over and check out at homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code B5Q to get 15% off your first order. I'm so excited to get my order. There's a ton of great designs. Some of their Smell the Roses shirt and there's some of their sweatshirts. I'm actually wearing one right now, so I can't wait to get that. Matt, I know you probably pulled the trigger some as well. Any word on a shipment for you?
Yeah, I just got that notification that my group of things is coming as well, so I'm very excited about that. We got a couple shirts from them kind of pre-release, which was exciting and definitely some cool stuff, but I definitely had to add a few more things as well and hit the credit card a bit.
Yeah, that was a big day Saturday afternoon going through and looking at all those. I'm like, oh, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one. I got this one in the mail already, but I still want that one. So, yeah, the credit card bill is certainly going to be got a big charge from Home Field, but they're a good brand to support. They did a lot of help with us promoting the podcast and us, of course, promoting their website as well. So if you guys haven't already checked it out, make sure to go over to Home Field Apparel and check that out. All right, we'll talk about a little bit of news before we get into some football discussion. Nothing too crazy, but there is some Former Badgers getting some minutes at some pretty high stakes, and one, of course, bringing home some serious hardware. Ryan McDonough, now a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course, we had Ryan McDonough going up against the young gun and Cole Caulfield in the Stanley Cup Finals, so we were going to have a Badger lifting the cup either way. But for Ryan McDonough to win back-to-back and be really a big contributor, both him and Caulfield were huge parts of the Lightning and Canadiens, but for McDonough to win back-to-back is pretty special for Wisconsin hockey. Anything you took from that, or just a cool moment to see a Wisconsin athlete on the big stage?
Anytime you can see a Wisconsin athlete go ahead and win, hoist the trophy, take part in just the finals, and in this case, the Stanley Cup Finals, it's a great thing for the brand that is Wisconsin, as well as, I mean, Ryan McDonough, tremendous talent. I can imagine that there's some pissed off Rangers fans right now after seeing that once they traded him away in 2018, he's gone on to win the two cups. And I mean, he's a leader. He's a really talented defenseman that continues to make really good plays. And I think the Lightning are lucky to have him. And it was fun to see kind of him and Caulfield square off. But I think most people kind of assumed that this was going to be the way that things unfolded.
Yeah, it was a great run for the Canadiens, but they, of course, fell to the gentleman's sweep 4-1. Tampa Bay Lightning are just a wagon right now. To win back-to-back years is pretty impressive, especially with last year being so weird, being in the bubble. You got some people who are saying, the bubble titles aren't a full title, but the Lightning came back and answered any doubters there, winning back-to-back. So really an impressive team overall, but like you said, always cool to see a Badger lifting the hardware. He's a Badger that I think a lot of fans look back on during his time at Wisconsin and look fondly of. I mean, you look at some of those players over the last decade. I know the last 2 years have been very low lows with some rough years, and then all of a sudden a high last year to this year having a really great team with Caulfield on it and then struggling in the NCAA tournament. So I think you look back at Ryan McDonough and his days with Wisconsin and always look at it fondly. They were a fun team to watch for sure. And for him to get to the pinnacle of the National Hockey League, not once but twice, is a pretty cool moment for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And we'll see if Frank Kaminsky can do something similar, I guess.
I was going to say, speaking of big moments, Frank Kaminsky, not only on the NBA Finals roster for the Phoenix Suns, but got some minutes in Game 1 and likely going to be getting some more minutes tonight in Game 2 as we record this. I know Dario Saric tore his ACL, one of the Suns' big men. So Frank, as their number 3 center, essentially, will now be getting some serious minutes in the NBA Finals, you would imagine. I know for Bucks fans, it's you're maybe torn a little bit, but I'm guessing the overwhelming majority are not really caring too much that Frank is winning games. They'd rather see the Bucks win. I know I'm in that category, but it's still cool to see, again, a Wisconsin athlete on the big stage. And now, not just getting scrub minutes, he's probably going to be thrown into the fold a little bit more. Will probably have an impact on this series. So I know we're probably rooting for the Bucks pretty hard, but it's still cool to see Frank getting some minutes.
Yeah, you got to root for him individually. Definitely not rooting for the Suns in any other way, though.
No, not at all. You don't need to see Frank wants to go out and score 30 and lose to the Bucks in the next 4 games. I would be totally fine with that, and we can sign up for that every time out, because everyone's hoping to see Milwaukee lift that same hardware, which has been a long time coming for Bucks fans. There's been a lot of rough years, and hopefully they can bounce back in Game 2 and even this series up. All right, moving on down the line in terms of news, Wisconsin volleyball announced their 2021 non-conference schedule. I know Wisconsin, with some talented players back, are going to be looking to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. They're going to get some good tests in this non-conference schedule. They've not only got Kentucky at home, which I think will be a very ruckus atmosphere. We've got TCU, Baylor will be a really good test, and then Dayton for 2 dates, as well as road trip to Marquette. So a lot of really interesting games for Wisconsin volleyball. I think that the field house for that Kentucky game will certainly be rocking. But anything to take from that non-conference schedule?
Yeah, I'm excited that they're having the red-white scrimmage. I think that's a return to normalcy that is needed, and it is exciting for fans. But, yeah, I mean, you've got to circle that Kentucky game. look at that and think, wow, that's a big one. That's going to be two top 25 teams, two of the better teams in the country going in on it. We'll see how Wisconsin holds up in that one. And it's always good to take care of Marquette. I would think that Wisconsin should be able to take advantage of the Golden Eagles in that one. But, yeah, Baylor is the other one to circle as a top team that will be coming in and taking on the Badgers at the Fieldhouse and the newly renovated, in some ways, Fieldhouse, which is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the first couple weekends of September are going to be quite a bit of fun. You'll have, of course, the opening of the Badger game September 4th. You'll have a Wisconsin volleyball game September 3rd, the night before. So you could have a late night at the Fieldhouse and an early morning at Camp Randall, and then the next weekend they've got Kentucky and they've got a home game with Eastern Michigan. So it's going to be nice to maybe have some of those quote-unquote doubleheaders where you can kind of get to a couple different games. I know that a Kentucky game will probably be a little bit more of a difficult ticket to get, but with hopefully, you know, with full capacity and, of course, they've got a little bit more space in terms of the Fieldhouse with this upcoming season. So should be a packed house, and you'll have some maybe some long weekends when you get to tailgating football early in the morning and also getting to a volleyball game late at night. But I think with COVID messing so many things up and making sporting events so difficult to get to last year, I think we'll welcome some of those late nights and early mornings where people can go ahead and attend both of those games.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, why don't we get into some football talk now that we've knocked out some news. So, again, at the front of the show, guys, we talked about it. We've been doing these new position coaches and kind of going in-depth with each of those and how things will change with some of these new ones. And, of course, Paul Chryst isn't necessarily a new coach by any means, of course, being the Wisconsin Badger head coach for years now, but he is taking back that similar role of quarterback coach now with John Budmeyer off to Colorado State. And it's going to be interesting to see how much this offense and quarterback position changes with Chryst now taking the full reins back in both positions. So maybe we'll start with the quarterback coach side of it, because I think there's two different conversations you can have. How do you think Chryst will help Mertz progress after an up and down year and also help develop some of the guys behind him? Because I know right now the attention is, of course, on Graham Mertz and his development, but there's other guys that he's going to be working with. How do you think he takes that quarterback room to the next level after a year that was that had ebbs and flows under Graham Mertz?
I think it's going to be big. A lot of times when you have a position coach who you are working, you know, very closely with, you grow that rapport, you can bounce ideas off one another, and you can kind of get in a groove. And I'm sure that Mertz had that with Budmeyer, and I think Budmeyer brought a lot of really nice things to the staff, but at the same time, he's a position coach whose focus is on just quarterbacks. You look at Paul Chryst, he's going to be looking at things through the lens of the bigger picture because he's the head coach, really taking back the offensive coordinator duties as well. So he's going to be going into that meeting room, talking with Graham Mertz and being able to help him hopefully see kind of the bigger picture and everything that's at works within the offense. Because I'm sure that Mertz knew some of the basic formations, the reads, being able to do all those aspects. But having a coach who not only has played the position, and I know Budmeyer did as well, but played the position, has coached it at multiple different levels and can kind of talk him through and break down what he's seeing at every snap is going to be crucial. And I think that that's something that's going to really help Graham Mertz, because I think Graham Mertz, you even heard it last year, some announcers, they would say that they tried to take some of the load off of him and say, hey, here's your one, maybe two reads, and then we want you to run. Hopefully they can break that down further so he can get through more progressions. I mean, part of that's on the offensive line and having wide receivers that can get open. But I do think that having Paul Chryst, who has such a breadth of knowledge in terms of being a quarterback, but also with the offense in general, because he's the one who put this offense together, I think that should help Mertz really better understand the offense completely and help him kind of take his game to the next level, because I think the physical capabilities that Mertz brings are there. That's ever present. It's the mental things that need to be focused upon and making sure that his fundamentals are sound, snap in and snap out. And I think that's what Paul Chryst can help him with in terms of taking the next step.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you look at Grant Mertz, even when he was coming into Wisconsin, you saw the, and of course, kind of thrust into action early with Jack Cohn last year, but you saw all the raw physical tools there. You saw the arm strength. He's got the touch. And in the last year, we saw that right out of the gate, you know, came out against Illinois and was just on fire. He looked like the real deal. Of course, later on in the season, injuries happened. There was a lot of different things, not to be a Mertz apologist, but I know there's a lot of outside factors that contributed to a less than up to par performance, you know, a subpar performance that way. And I think he'd be the first to admit it as well. So I think Paul Chryst this year can kind of come in and clean up a lot of those things, of course, but also just help him read, you know, like you said, make progressions, you know, read the defense and not go to just your first and second option. So part of that will be Grant Mertz taking the step in terms of maturity, going from, you know, being a young kid to now all of a sudden having a lot of experience under his belt and moving into a normal year. But I also think Chryst will really help, you know, move him along in that progression as well. So I think it's twofold where both guys can kind of take that step and Paul Chryst can, of course, push him along to make that next step. So I think all of it being under one umbrella with those two working closely together will certainly help bring this quarterback group back to normalcy and hopefully it helped the offense click a lot better overall.
Yeah, and hopefully they have signals down this year so we're not having Graham Mertz run a marathon every game to the sidelines back and forth.
Yeah, I was going to say, he certainly got his steps in last year, just running back and forth. You might have to slip my Apple Watch on him so I can get my steps in for the day with the way he was running. And, yeah, that was I think that just goes to show that the offense last year was a little bit of a mess. And hopefully with this all under one umbrella with Paul Chryst and Graham Mertz, and him taking over every aspect of the offense will hopefully allow things to be a little bit more clean, a little bit more crisp as we move forward here.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of the next part, I think the next part of the recruiting or the quarterback room is recruiting. That's always an interesting battle that you take a look at, and especially with Paul Chryst now taking on a little bit of everything with the offense. The recruiting part is going to be something to certainly pay attention to. And, of course, I think they've hit a couple home runs with Mertz. I know last year was maybe not the year he wanted, but I think a lot of that doubt will be answered this year. But beyond that, they've done well with Deacon Hill, Miles Burkett now. So far it seems like with John Budmeyer now being gone, it doesn't seem like the quarterback room has taken much of a miss quite yet. So how do you think the recruiting phase is going with now all of that being under that Paul Chryst umbrella?
So far it seems to be doing fine. I think really you look at the way in which Wisconsin's quarterback room is built right now, and with Cohn out of the equation, you've got Mertz for a few more years, so I think you feel comfortable there. Assuming he doesn't just like light the world on fire and leave early or something, you know, completely out of the blue. But I think you then look at, you've got Chase Wolf, a guy who has played, you know, sparingly, helped out as a backup role. Danny Vandenboom, this is probably his last year. And then you've got Chase Wolf as a reserve. Daniel Wright is a walk-on who probably won't see the field. At least Badger fans should hope that he probably doesn't see the field. And I think the bringing in of Deacon Hill was a big get. I really like him as a prospect. I think he's a type of player that could really flourish in this offense. I just it's one of those when you look at the years, though, in how they went ahead and skipped a class, I think that's something that I still am a little hesitant about. That 2020 class, they didn't really go after a lot of guys. They had offers out to Tyler Van Dyke, Max Johnson, and Parker McQuarrie. I thought that they were going to get McQuarrie. He ended up going to UCLA. And I think them completely going away from that had a lot to do with, you know, the Graham Mertz and everything, as well as Deacon Hill. I think it definitely helped them to keep Deacon Hill instead of him eventually potentially flipping over to UCLA. But I you then look at it, like I said, Deacon Hill I feel good about. Then in this most recent class, you know, they've got Miles Burkett, the in-state kid who plays really well. I think he's going to be a solid player for the Badgers. But you also have to look at the fact that they didn't get Devin Brown, and he was their top of the board guy, four-star kid. out of, I mean, he was from Arizona, went to Utah now so he could actually play last year due to COVID, committed to USC, you know, out of nowhere. We had him on the podcast, and he seemed like it was a done deal. He was going to be a Badger. And then that USC offer, and it kind of just shocked everyone. But he just lit up the lead 11 and looked really good. So I think that's a miss. Like, I should say I'm guessing that's going to be a miss. USC quarterbacks have a pretty strong tradition of going on and doing some good things, having a good shot in the NFL. So I get his decision. But that's one I think Wisconsin would have rather had. It took them a while to pull the trigger on going and pivoting to Burkett, who I definitely think will bring something, an added element to the offense in terms of his ability to run. But I still think that you look at it, not taking somebody in that 2020 class, and then looking at it that, hey, they didn't get the guy that they pretty much had sewn up in the 2022 class. And I think it's a pretty mixed bag right now in terms of quarterback recruiting. We'll see what they can do in 2023 and beyond. But I do think that while I'm excited about what Burkett, what Deacon Hill, Graham Mertz can do, that's three quarterbacks in four cycles, and that's not something that's always great to do because you're going to be low on scholarship numbers here in that quarterback room moving forward once Chase Wolf and Danny Vandenboom are gone.
Yeah, I think that whole part of it is certainly interesting when you look at the numbers that way. I think it comes down to if you look forward into the future, I think if you look at it and say, okay, Graham Mertz had a good career, Deacon Hill, you know, came along, and Miles Burkett, if all those guys shake out and do well, then I think you don't feel that the Devin Brown, you know, him going to USC is as big of a miss. But if you look at one of those three, and I think Graham Mertz is maybe unfair to put in that same group because he's already had experience. But if you look at Hill and Miles Burkett, if one of those two doesn't pan out the way I think Wisconsin is looking at it, and of course with Miles Burkett, I think he's going to be a good player, but he wasn't their top of the board guy. So that part, if something doesn't quite click there, then I could see you going back and say, yeah, that was definitely a big miss with Devin Brown, because if he was all USC from the jump, I don't think you'd look at it and say it was a miss. It was just, you know, this kid wanted to go elsewhere. But like you said, when he was on the podcast, it sounded, you know, you and I, when we got offline, said, man, that sounds like as close to a done deal for Wisconsin as you could get. I mean, we're not experts. We don't know what a high school kid is thinking. And, of course, those things change. But the way he talked about it on the podcast, you thought it was pretty much a done deal. And for him to end up at USC, granted, you know, like you said, USC is a great school. They have a good track record of putting quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's been a prospect that has certainly taken off. So maybe it would have not ended up Wisconsin at the end, but there was even, you know, 247 predictions. There was a whole nine yard for Devin Brown to end up a Badger. It didn't happen. So I think time will tell on where they're at in terms of the recruiting space right now in terms of the quarterback position. I think you've got to like what you've got, but there's certainly the possibility that if something doesn't go right, that you could look at it and go, man, the way things shook out, maybe they could have done a little bit better in that quarterback room moving forward. But you know, that could happen. They could see that as a miss, or things work out and the guys that they have take off and you don't think twice about it. So the future prospect is certainly something to watch for in that quarterback room.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with you that as long as Hill or Burkett, I think you really just need one of those guys to pan out and be the guy to take over for once Graham Mertz is gone. You really just need one of them. But in this day and age where quarterbacks are transferring, you still have injuries to deal with. I still have some hesitancy about them skipping taking a quarterback in that class following Mertz. I think that was a move that we'll see how it plays out moving forward. But I can still remember the Badgers getting burned when they saw Bud Meyer get hurt, when they had Kurt Phillips get hurt, right? Like that was a complete an utter disaster for a while there in terms of the quarterback room, and had to really try to figure some things out last minute. So I don't think it'll be kind of that dire. At least I hope it won't get to that point. But at the same time, numbers-wise, they're pretty thin at quarterback. But I do think that the talent is there in the room and that they should be okay on the talent side of things.
Yeah, and going off of that, I know the next you look forward the 2023 class where Wisconsin's going to go. Of course, they've thrown off that offer to Braden Dorman, who seems to be their guy in that future group right now, the top ranked player in the state of Colorado according to 247 Sports. So in that situation with where he's at right now, you got to feel good about Wisconsin being in that competition. He's got some offers from some other big schools, but in terms of program pedigree, I think Wisconsin's by far and away the leader in the clubhouse. He's got offers from Mississippi State, Oregon State, Louisiana Tech, Kansas, Iowa State, Colorado State, and Colorado. So when you look at that list, Wisconsin's certainly doing a good job in that class of 2023 right now. And if he lands a commitment there, you feel pretty good about it because really, like you said, we're only taking one a class maybe, and sometimes they skip a year, which we've talked about a little bit already. But what do you make of Wisconsin going after him, and is there any other things that you see in that 2023 group that could maybe alter the picture a little bit as we talk about where Wisconsin goes with the future under Paul Chris in that quarterback room?
Yeah, I think the 2023 class is going to be a big one at quarterback. You want to get one of your top of the board guys, and I do think that Dorman is probably their best bet there. They've got another offer out to Cam Edge. I think he's going to be a little tougher to pull in. Quarterback, I mean, he was out of that kind of DC. He played at DeMatha. He transferred over to Delaware to play now. Once again, COVID stuff, but I do think that Dorman, it has a well-beatable offer list, has the size that you want at the quarterback, pocket passer, that I think that Wisconsin's in a really good spot for right now. I'm interested to see when it comes to fall and he's able to get out there, put some more film out, what other schools get involved, and can Wisconsin get him on campus early in the fall and hopefully shut things down, because quarterback recruiting goes much faster than most other positions. Guys try to lock down that spot because, once again, you're only looking at one usually. So I think as things stand, I think Wisconsin feels really good. I think that it's pretty telling that they only have those two offers out and that they had a bunch of kids on campus, a bunch of four-star kids. They had an in-state kid, Chase Spellman, as well on campus, all of which are talented players come in for camp, and Dorman was the only one to earn an offer. And I think if they were kind of doing a spray and pray method and trying to see which guy will bite, I think you might be like, okay, well, they must not feel great about any of the guys in terms of being a Badger lean or really thinking they got the top status for them or lead for his recruitment. But I do think only throwing that one offer out screams that they feel really good about Dorman and that they think they have a really good shot at bringing him in. Now it's a matter of keeping other programs away, because there's going to be more they're going to get involved, and then closing come fall, winter, when recruiting starts really firing up and kids can get back on campus again and for games.
Yeah, and kind of going off the previous conversation with that, I think that Braden Dorman, like you said, if they were throwing out offers left and right, maybe you didn't feel as confident, but I think right now they've certainly got at least a bulk of their eggs in his basket, thinking that they can land him in that part of the 2023 group. But I think the question beyond that is if some other school comes in and makes a push and Wisconsin all of a sudden doesn't get their top-of-the-board guy in that class as well, along with not landing Devin Brown in that class before, all of a sudden you're looking at the quarterback position and maybe scratching your head a little bit of there. So, again, the quarterback room is so interesting in terms of recruiting, because it's not like you're going out there and circling, like we've talked about the defensive line room and the cornerback room a lot. You've got a few different guys circled. If you land one, two of them, you feel good. If you land a couple at that other position, you feel good. But with quarterback, you've really got one shot at a lot of these guys, and you're likely only taking one in that group. So if you've got this guy honed in on as being your top one, you've got to really do a good job of going out there and making sure to lock him down, because if not, all of a sudden you've got 2 years of maybe, I don't want to say settling, because I think Miles Burkett will possibly has the chance to be a really good player for Wisconsin, but again, wasn't the guy that they had circled first. If you miss out on that top two guys, what that might do for the future of the position is certainly interesting. And, of course, college football is changing all the time. You've got transfers that can now hop around left and right, but Wisconsin hasn't always been most active in that market, especially, you know, looking at the quarterback room. They've landed some, you know, one-and-dones like Russell Wilson's, but you're not going to land that time in and time out. So it's certainly an interesting conversation that really ramps up with the quarterback room only having, you know, a limited number of players in that room.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is let's throw an idea out here and I don't see this happening, but let's say that after this year, Chase Wolf is like, hey, I want to go play somewhere. And he decides he's going to transfer, which, hey, more power to him. I don't see that happening. I think he loves it at UW. But let's say he does because he's looking at his eligibility clock and he's saying, hey, I'm probably not going to have the shot to be the guy here. I want to go play at somewhere else. And he leaves. Wisconsin's down a couple quarterbacks. Maybe 2023 is a year scholarship offers are back to a more normal cycle. I mean, this year, the Badgers 2022 cycle, they're really strapped for scholarship offers that they can throw out there. Maybe in 2023, they have the ability to bring in more guys. Maybe you see a kid like Chase Spellman out of Wales, plays at Kettle Moraine, 6'4", 205, that he's in-state kid that they can give a gray shirt offer to and get him into the program with, you know, a couple years where he's going to be a walk-on, a couple years where he's on scholarship. And instead you bring in two quarterbacks in the class, similar to what they did when they brought in Jack Cohn and Danny Vandenboom. I think that might be a way to try to boost the numbers in the quarterback room, especially if you're looking at if Paul Chryst looks at things and sees, okay, well, Chase Wolf just transferred and Graham Mertz, you know, he lights it up in 2020 this year and then is probably projected to be a guy who leaves after his junior year, then it's all the more reason to bring in another guy. So I do think there's a chance they bring in two quarterbacks this year, but I do think that if they get a kid like Dorman, it lowers that possibility, unless it's a kid from in-state like Spellman or somebody who's a little lower-rated recruit that has a chance to really flash and has high potential, but not necessarily a really tough offer list coming in.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. That's what makes the quarterback room and that recruitment so fascinating is that you look at not only the guys that you have in the room right now, but you're also looking at how a guy in the 2023 class might change the dynamics of a class. So I think that's what makes recruiting so much different in that position versus others. But going off of, we talked a little bit about the quarterback room. Now let's focus in on Hone or as Chryst as the offensive coordinator, because I think that's the other big part of this offseason change. I think it'll be a welcome change going back to him as a play caller. But in terms of the offense as a whole, what do you think he'll kind of bring back now that he takes the reins back over?
Well, first and foremost, I do think that there will be greater organization within the offense. I don't think there's going to possibly be those things where you're having to have your quarterback run over to the sidelines. Like, I mean, that was straight up like high school football. Like played that. We didn't even do that in high school football. And that was many years ago. So I look at it, I think there's going to be a greater organization, first and foremost. Beyond that, I think another thing that he's going to be bringing back is maybe a little bit more of a balanced approach, maybe opening up some opportunities for some more creativity. And I do think aggressiveness. You look back at last year, and I know part of the reason that they couldn't be aggressive was because they had so many guys hurt. They didn't have a full assortment of weapons for Mertz and for really that entire backfield for most of the year. But you saw in 2019 them really go ahead and put their foot on the gas and take out a team like Michigan where they're going for it on their own like 38-yard line and on fourth and one and being willing to do that. And we didn't see that last year. We just didn't see that. And I'm sure part of that was confidence in the offense. But I do think part of it is just you had a new offensive coordinator. Now, granted, we don't know how long Joe Rudolph has been calling the plays. It's one of those things where every year it was brought up and people would ask, Paul Chryst, and he would just kind of talk about the opportunity that was in front of them and pivot pretty quick there. But I do think that it's pretty telling that he went ahead and said, hey, Joe Rudolph was calling it last year. We're making a change. I mean, that's definitely probably showing that Chryst was probably calling plays for a while. You know, he came in 2015. I would guess probably doing it through that 2018 year, maybe a little into 2019. Last year they tried something different maybe, and things didn't work. And so I do think that you're going to see better passing schemes going forward. I just think you're going to see more creativity. And, God, I brought this up earlier. I really just hope I see that tight end middle screen. I can still have images of Owen Daniels running up the middle of the field or Lance Kendrick doing the same and busting it off for 30 yards when it was third and eight and everybody's, you know, in prevent trying to keep you from getting to the chains.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think the creativity will certainly be back. He's always been great at that, even during his time when he was just the offensive coordinator at Wisconsin. He's always had a great mind for coming up with things and using his personnel in the most creative way possible. So I think that's certainly something that you'll see. Aggressiveness, I hope so. I love the aggressive Paul Chryst when he goes out and plays that way. I think it gives the players a lot of confidence on the offense that they can go and get things clicking and make these things happen and not, you know, let's be conservative, punt it away, and let our defense win it. I think that gives the offense a lot of confidence. The other thing that I'm really excited to hopefully get back with Paul Chryst is the play calling and the flow of the game. I think last year sometimes, and part of it is, you know, the offense was really in shambles a lot of the time. You had your personnel banged up. It was a weird year with COVID. You had all sorts. You had merch running over the sidelines. But there was also parts of it where sometimes the rhythm of the play calling just didn't make a lot of sense, where I think Paul Chryst in the past has really been good about knowing what card to play in the down and distance and situation. Versus last year, there was a couple times where it's third and two, and there's a play action pass chucked down to the end zone, and you're sitting there going, man, you know, we only needed 2 yards. And sometimes that aggressive approach is great, but I think Chryst has a really good understanding and feeling as a play caller. I think calling plays at the football, especially at the college football level, and finding the right rhythm to how to go about it is really an art form. And I think Paul Chryst does a good job of, where if you've got a play caller that is clicking on all cylinders, it's really fun to watch. And Wisconsin didn't have that last year. It just felt like messy a lot of the times in terms of approach. So I think that's the other thing that Wisconsin will certainly get back, in addition to the aggressiveness, is the flow and the play calling will start to make a little bit more sense, I think, this upcoming year versus where it was at last year.
You mean they're not going to run their fourth-string running back when it's third and eight in plus territory?
Yes.
And it's his only carry for the entire year?
Yep, that's the things that I think last year you go, and maybe, who knows, maybe last year they looked at it after they lost a couple games with COVID and just said, hey, let's just try something out. Let's let Joe, you know, call the plays for the rest of the year and see what works and what doesn't. I think we got a good answer on what doesn't work, but I think the flow will certainly be something that will be welcomed back and be a lot of fun to see this upcoming year.
Yeah, and that's what, when I look at it, I you look at their yards and kind of how everything has changed, and I know we're going to talk about what we could see from this offense in a little bit, but I'm glad you brought in kind of making the right calls at the right time. Timing is so important when you're an offensive coordinator, and you're right. It didn't seem always to click or to jive when you saw it. And right, like, we're just untrained eyes, and I'm sure that people who are paid much more than us are making decisions. But I do think Paul Chryst making a stand and saying, I'm taking back over offensive play calling, says a lot. And it tells you everything you need to know about what he saw last year and what he's thinking about everything that kind of transpired on the offense.
Well, to round things out, let's go ahead and talk about the offense and where we think they'll improve a little bit. Because I think when you look at him taking back over the play calling duties, I think everybody is now in a really strong position to do what they do best. You know, you've got Chryst back as the quarterback coach and offensive play caller. I think that's the strength of him as a coach. You look at Joe Rudolph, he's now focused back in on the offensive line. I think that's the strength for him as a coach. I think Chris being solely focused on the offense and just allowing Jim Leonard and his staff to handle things on the defense is great, and Chris can use his mind on the offensive side is really going to – everything's going to, I think, elevate position by position on that offensive side of the ball. But where do you think the improvements will be with now all these changes kind of being back to everybody, I think, playing to their full strength?
I think you're going to see a lot better offense just in general. You're going to see more explosive plays, hopefully less turnovers. I don't know. I think that's one thing that I would still kind of look at and say, ooh, I don't know if that's going to necessarily get better. But I look at it as Paul Chryst came in 2015, right? He's been here for a while now. He's got 6 years under his belt as Wisconsin head coach. And in those years, there's only been 1 year where they haven't averaged over 5 yards per carry. And that was last year. And last year they were at 4.9 yards per carry. Most of the other years they were at over 6 per carry. And I know that some of that is elevated by having a guy like Jonathan Taylor. But Jonathan Taylor averaged over 6 in 1 year, 5.3. So it's not like it's like crazy difference in terms of the average per carry here. But I think the biggest thing is that the offense couldn't rely on their run game last season. And part of that was offensive line. Some of that was talent in the backfield. And I think that this year they're going to have Berger. Groshek had the Groshek game against Minnesota. But outside of that, you just didn't see much from the offense in terms of running the football, which was partly because teams could stack the box. Wisconsin couldn't throw the damn ball. I do think that this year you're going to see the offense. I think there's going to be a more athletic offensive line. John Dietzen, he's a really strong player. Could do a lot of nice things. Cole Van Lannen, really big, strong left tackle. But I do think that Tyler Beach gives you a little bit more in terms of pass blocking at left tackle. I think that Jack Nelson gives you a lot more athleticism at right guard than Dietzen. So I think that the offensive line will be in a better spot, especially if Caden Lyles can stay healthy, which in turn gives a kid like Berger, Ches Malusi, I think he's a wild card in this whole equation as somebody who could really help them out as that running back number two. So I think the running game is going to get back to a spot where you look at it and say, oh yeah, that's Wisconsin running the football. We didn't see that last year. You didn't see a lot of breakaway plays. I mean, John Chenault had the longest run of the season at 43 yards. That is absurd. So I do think that there's going to be more of an emphasis on running the football to set up the pass. And I think that will in turn help the passing game in a lot of ways as well. And I think just having the weapons back at wide receiver is going to do all the difference for the passing game. I don't think that you're going to see Spencer Rattler type numbers or anything like that, but I do think you're going to see Graham Mertz looking a lot more comfortable, playing a lot more confident, and completing passes down the field to a better assortment of wide receivers than were out there last year.
Yeah, I think there's so many different things that you can look at and point to the offense that will certainly be better. And that's probably true for a lot of teams across the country. Last year, you had so many. It was just a weird year. You had opt-outs. You had guys getting hurt. You had COVID pauses. So I think offense as a whole in college football will be a little bit better of a product. But for Wisconsin especially, you're going to see an offense that will click a little bit better. The run game will hopefully be more explosive to open things up and allow them to work, you know, the passing game off of the run game. Wisconsin does a really good job when they're clicking on all cylinders of being able to, and especially under Paul Chryst, his offenses were always really good about, you know, establishing the run and then working the pass off of that. And I think that should help Graham Mertz. It should help the receivers take a little bit of pressure off them. And the offensive line, I think with Joe Rudolph back, focused completely in on that, will allow the offensive line to hone in on making their blocks. So I know we sound like we're expecting the Wisconsin offense to really take a big step and everything's going to be better. But I think when you look at how low things were at some points last year, it's hard to envision anything where anything's going to take a step back. And hopefully that's the case. And Wisconsin offense will click the way they have in previous years. And hopefully we'll get back to some winning ways. So I think last year was a year that we learned a lot. We saw a lot from Wisconsin football, but not a year that any of us need to really revisit and want to go back and see it once again.
I honestly, dude, if it's not better, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, because that Wisconsin offense last year was reminiscent of Northwestern the year before. I mean, they couldn't do it on the ground. They couldn't do it through the air. They had a redshirt freshman quarterback throwing it 40-plus times a game a couple of times, and that's not a recipe for success when most of your offensive line, most of your entire coaching style and defense is predicated on maintaining control of the ball and running the football. It was a mess. So I think it's going to be much better, especially when you look at just the fact that they're going to have a healthy amount of guys. Who knows? Maybe injuries pop back up and Wisconsin's screwed from the get-go because of that. But I do think that unless something drastically wrong happens, Wisconsin's going to be in a better spot offensively. Defense, who knows? But I do think the offense is going to make huge gains compared to what they put together last year for a variety of reasons.
Fingers crossed. It'll certainly, if they do take those strides forward, it'll be a much more entertaining game of football. As fans get back to Camp Randall, I think we'll all hope to see some exciting offense from the Badgers. All right, guys, that wraps up another week of the podcast. Always, as always, thank you for listening. We'll be back with you later next week on Wisconsin. Thank you.